Welcome, everybody. It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a slightly different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.
Welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Well, wasn't that a lively little jingle ahead of us? Hey, that woke me up. Well, look, we're going to be talking about improving workplace relationships today. But before we get to that, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests from the past. Speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. So just drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com, and we'll talk and see what we can set up. Well, before we get to today's guest, commercial time. So let me just remind you that here at the Coaching Perspective, we have been coaching executives and business owners for over 18 years under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Helping to create more effective teams is our primary focus. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. And in all cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and that of the individual members. We also offer communication workshops, coaching for people who want to sharpen particular business skills, and individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position. Well, we have got a great guest with us today. She not only is well-qualified, she's a good friend of mine. I've known Anita for a long time. We're going to be talking with Anita Golden, SPHRACC. She's going to explain all of that. She calls her process relationship repair. It's all about improving workplace relationships through a combination of coaching, mediation, and the use of assessment tools to build self-awareness and better understand others. Anita, welcome to the Coaching Perspective.
Thank you, Doug. It's so much fun to be on your show. I've been following you. As you said, we've been friends for a long time. I've been following your show for years, and it's quite an honor to finally get the opportunity to be on your show.
Hey, the honor is all ours. You know, I know your qualifications. I know your background. I've seen you reinvent yourself two or three times over the years, and I'm really excited to have you on the show today, talk about not only what you've done in the past, but some of the great things that you've got going in the future here.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm excited to be here, too.
Well, great. Well, look, let's start out by telling the audience a little bit about what you did before, what you're doing now.
Okay. What a lot of people don't know about me is I actually, my degree is in animal science, which maybe is a little bit strange for the kind of work I do, although people will say to me all the time that I'm working with animals. They're just a different kind. Intelligent, we like to think anyway. But my background was in animal science, but I moved into the hotel industry and specifically into human resources over the years. And I actually have about 20 years or so experience as a director of human resources for Hyatt and Hilton Hotels. And I absolutely loved what I did in the hotel business and in HR. But what I discovered was that there were parts of HR I loved and parts that didn't excite me. So the part that I loved was working with the people, doing the people development types of things, training and coaching and helping people get to the goals that they were trying to reach. That was the exciting and the fun part for me. The part that wasn't as much fun were things like benefit reports or interviewing or workers' comp, that kind of thing. So anyway, I decided that I really wanted to do what I love to do, because that's kind of my motto. I always want to do what I love to do. So I ended up leaving human resources as a corporate director and started my own business. And that was back in 2006. So I'm just hitting I'm just in my seventh year, and it's been quite a journey. What I did along the way when I decided that I wanted to transition, I actually hired a coach because I thought I wanted to do coaching, but I thought, you know what, maybe if I hire a coach, it will help me decide if that's the right route to go, number one. And it was somebody who could give me a little guidance on, you know, how do you even start a business? Because when you are a person working for others, you know, your skill set is one, you know, is one way. Starting your own business was a whole totally new thing for me. So I was very grateful to have the guidance of a coach for myself.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, that HR background that you have that's so solid really fits so nicely into coaching. It's just, you know, hand in glove. It gives you that ability to really see some of the issues that we're dealing with as coaches in the workplace.
Yeah, it really did feel like a very natural fit making that transition, you know, because I already, from an internal standpoint, kind of understood the workings of what went on in a business and what went on for the employees. And this shift really just gave me like a different perspective to approach it from.
Now, Anita, you've got an HR credential, the SPHR. What does that stand for?
That stands for Senior Human Resource Professional. And basically, just like with coaching, ICF certifies or credentials people who reach a certain level of knowledge. The same thing applies for human resources. You know, basically, once you reach a certain level of expertise, you go through some testing, and if you can pass the testing and prove that you have all this experience, they give you a nice little certificate to put on your on your door.
Yeah, I've got a few of those. I think they're behind the door, actually.
I know, it's kind of it's you know, at the time it's exciting when you get it, but you know, after a while you start to take it for granted. But one of the things that I've had to do, I got that SPHR back in 2000, and I've had to recertify every 3 years. So I've recertified like four times, I think it is, three or four times now. So it does help me in my business, and it does keep me sort of up to date with what's going on in the human resources world.
And you're also a certified coach. You have an ACC. And who did you get your coaching training through?
So I went through Coach University for I actually portfolioed to get my ACC. I went through Coach University for my training, and then you have to get a certain number of hours to get that ACC, which was 100. So, and go through mentor coaching. So, once I achieved those hurdles, I got my ACC, and now I'm in the process because I have way more than 100 hours now. So now I'm preparing to start putting stuff together to do my PCC.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, okay, so that brings us sort of clears the background. Tell us a little bit about your business. What are you doing now?
I just recently went through a whole name change and branding change. My company was the Coaching Compass for 7 years, and I just launched a new website and a new name. The name of my company is now Golden Leadership Group. And part of the change of name was actually because there was someone out there with a book called Coach Compass that had a trademark. So I made that decision to transition and change my name, and I'm actually excited and happy that I've done that. I offer a variety of services. I do one-on-one coaching. I also will facilitate groups, do group coaching, or facilitate groups for things like retreats and focus groups. I do leadership training. I do team building events, and my team building is not just like a classroom activity. I actually take people out in the field, and I do GPS murder mysteries and beachside scavenger hunts. And recently, I've created a new program called Acting Up, which is the use of improv games to help leaders with their communication skills and being quicker to think on the fly. Because we know that as leaders, you know, we can't always have all the answers in our pocket to pull out. We sometimes have to improvise a little bit. So that's the team building piece. And then the newest part to my business and what I'm most excited about is really this relationship repair process that I've developed and have started rolling out to some different companies. And that's where I am combining my mediation skills, which I actually have my certification through Orange County dispute resolution. So I combine my mediation skills with my coaching skills, and then I use assessment tools, which predominantly I use the Everything Disc workplace, which is a really cool tool. I'll talk about it a little bit later. And sometimes I'll use 360s as well. But those are kind of my mainstays of what I do. When companies call me, sometimes they'll call and they'll say, oh, we need you to come in and do a communication training. But I will tell you, 9 times out of 10, a training in communication is not going to solve the problem. It's usually much more complex. And so I do like to think of myself as a consultant and a coach, because I do go into companies and kind of help assess and evaluate what's going on and try to come up with an approach that's going to really address the needs of that company.
Wonderful. And also, let me just interject here for our audience that Anita's website is goldinleadership.com, and that's G-O-L-D-I-N. I've misspelled it E-N for I don't know how long. Sorry. But
okay.
goldinleadership.com. And by the way, your website is beautiful. I really like your new website.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I was told by my web designer that I was very lucky to have the name Golden and be a Golden with an I-N versus an E-N, because when people Google Golden with an E-N leadership, they'll come up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of maybe even millions of websites. But because I'm unique, I'm a G-O-L-D-I-N, it's easier to find me.
Oh, well, you are unique in more ways than just the spelling of your name. So,
thank you.
It is. That was a compliment. Well, look, Anita, we have a standard question I've asked all the guests for going on 4 years now, and I love the answers, and that is to tell me an experience or a key lesson that you've learned that really has sort of become your guiding principle, that thing that keeps you oriented to true north in your life and in your business. What would that be for you?
Wow. Well, there's kind of a couple things that come to mind. You know, when I think about an impactful lesson that I've learned over the years, I really think that the thing that really stands out for me is the power of self-belief, of believing in oneself, and the effect of other people believing in me have or in others. So if you're sort of getting my drift here, what I'm saying is, you know, it's important to believe in yourself, but when other people believe in you as well, it can make an amazing difference in what you're able to accomplish in life. And I was very fortunate because I grew up in a house with parents and a family that really very much believed in me and my abilities and encouraged me that I could do anything that I want to do. And that's really kind of helped me take the risks and do the different things along the path that I've done. But it really came to light, you know, when I think about stories that really stand out in my mind. You know, I mentioned I was an animal science graduate. You know, that's what I studied in college. And I was a psychology major, and I transferred to a new school, University of Massachusetts, to study animal science. And I was pretty nervous about taking on a science major. It's like a whole other ball of wax. And I had to take an organic chemistry class. So I don't know. Have you ever taken organic chemistry, Doug?
No, I've pretty much avoided it. I read the little brief on what it meant and said, that's not for me.
Well, organic chemistry is all those C, H's, and O's. It's all just carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen molecules, and very complex. And it just scared me to death. And I just got it in my mind that I just didn't think I was going to be successful. But I knew I had to take the class. I signed up to take it in the summer so I could put all my focus into that class. And the most amazing thing happened. When I started taking that class, the professor made me feel smart. He made me feel like everything that came out of my mouth was intelligent, and that I was getting it without, you know, the questions I'd ask and things like that. And he just really made me believe that I could do it. And slowly I started to believe that I could do it as well. And, you know, in the end, I ended up with a, you know, an A in organic chemistry. And, you know, whenever I have clients that feel like, you know, I don't know if I can, you know, climb that mountain. I don't know if I can accomplish, you know, that feat. I always think about that chemistry teacher, because truly, you know, when you believe in yourself and when other people believe in you, you can do amazing, amazing things, you know. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the lesson, you know, like when I think about lessons I've learned. But when you talk about guiding principles, I think I actually have a different thought about my guiding principle.
Okay.
And that is, and this is what I live by. You have to do what you love and love what you do. And what I mean by that is, you know, you really, you know, in order to, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we maybe only get one chance at life. And so we want to make it really special, and we want to enjoy the things that we do. And I think that motivation comes from doing the things that we want to do naturally. You know, so I am a real believer in doing what you love and loving what you do. And I think that's why I'm a coach, because, you know, I recognized when I was in HR that I loved working with people, but I also recognized that I wanted to do just that part of HR and really get focused. And so, you know, honestly, I feel like, you know, the slogan, when people say, you know, they're living the dream, I feel like I'm living the dream, because I get to do what I love every day, and I get to work with people, and I get to see them, you know, develop and grow and be who they want to be. So nothing can be quite as rewarding to me than that.
Well, that, you know, again, you've sort of upheld our tradition here in that I've never had a duplicate answer to that question. In 4 years, everybody has a unique perspective on that question and what it's meant to them and what it's meant to their life. And, you know, and I really like the emphasis you place when others believe in you. You know, we see this with children, and we know what impact we can have on children when we support them and we encourage them and we realize how great they can really be. And it is so depressing that when we get to dealing with those children 30 years, 40 years later, when they're CEOs and business owners, and they're questioning their abilities when they've got the ability. It's such a shame. It is.
Right. I mean, so much happens along the way that kind of can at times discourage us or beat us down a little bit. But, yeah, there's something so powerful about having people believe in you, because it's I guess it's like a validation, right? It's a validating thing, and it makes us, you know, feel like we can do anything. And it does sometimes surprise me when you talk to some of these leaders that you would think that they would have more confidence than, you know, than God, and they don't. They don't.
Yeah.
They're just as insecure as the rest of us at times, you know.
It reminds me, last week I talked about a quote that really applies to this by Marianne Williamson. And she wrote a comment that says, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. And that's what we're talking about, is reinforcing in people how powerful they can be. So
I love
congratulations
that.
To you for doing what you love, loving what you do, and supporting others in doing it. So
Thank you.
So, okay, so let's get into workplace relationships and your process of relationship repair. What inspired you to focus your practice on improving workplace relationships?
Well, you know, as an HR director, I saw a lot of drama, you know, at work and in the workplace, and people getting frustrated and unhappy. And, you know, obviously, as an HR person, part of my job was to help reduce that conflict and try to create a happier work environment. You know, so this was really, you know, has been a focus of mine for years and years. But what has happened, like, really over the past couple years in my practice is, as I would sit down to coach managers, nine times out of ten, there would always be a dysfunctional relationship that was impacting their ability to achieve what they were trying to achieve. It's really like when you're going through a coaching process with someone and they're telling you about the frustrations they're having with this one person, and you know, you talk about different approaches and you have them come up with some different ideas. But it seemed like when it came to confronting conflict or relationship issues, it seemed that many of the managers and leaders I was working with had a very difficult time in how to approach it, and number one, not put jobs in jeopardy, not damage relationships so that they were, you know, unfixable. It's just such a fragile thing. And so that's when I sort of got the idea that maybe it could be helpful for me as a coach to bring people together that are having difficulty communicating, connecting, and resolving their differences. Maybe it could be helpful if I created a process to make it a little easier. So that's really kind of how I got going down this road, was really just having clients who were having difficulty themselves resolving the conflicts that they were facing. So that's when I made up, I'll use that for lack of a better word, that's when I made up the relationship repair process.
Okay. By the way, I like the title.
Thank you.
You can make it up. It sounds great. It's descriptive. Who do you work with? Now, when you're coaching people in this, are you working with an individual that's having an issue? Are you working with a team or two people? What's your typical client look like in this issue?
So it really varies quite a bit. Sometimes it starts out with a coaching client, and then it turns into a pairs or teams scenario. You know, like I was thinking about one situation where, you know, one person was an employee was having an issue with their manager. The manager was having an issue with the employee. The employee was having an issue with the manager. And then there was a third person who came into the scenario because of the impact they were making on the working relationship of that pair. So it can really vary quite a bit, but it generally starts out with me coaching an individual and then making the decision, you know what, let's do a relationship repair, let's do some sessions here, let's bring the other person in, and let's see if we can make some headway. I have had situations where I've gotten a phone call from, you know, like a general manager at a hotel. I get a lot of hotel clients because that's my background, but I get a call from a general manager of a hotel, and they say, I have these two guys, and they're not getting along, and if they can't get along, I want to get rid of both of them. And I say, okay, calm down. Let me see what I can do to help. So there are those situations where neither person is my individual coaching client, but they're brought to me as a pair that needs to find some common ground.
Is there any you've dealt with so many cases in this area. Is there any sort of common reasons for these dysfunctional relationships, as you would call them?
Well, you know, I think at the core of all of them tends to be a lack of trust. And the trust issue is generally based on history. You know, something that has gone down, whether it's been a miscommunication or people having misperceptions of what's really going on. So I would really say that trust tends to be at the heart of the matter. Some other common issues that come up are simple but difficult things like personality style, power struggles, you know, people being protective of their position, wanting to ensure that nobody is stepping on their toes. And once in a while, it can sort of go into problems where there have been personal friendships and then people have promoted upward, kind of like that sexual harassment scenario where you have people working together that have a close relationship, then it breaks up, and then down the road now somebody's supervising someone, or just working in the same, same location, and problems start to occur. But again, if I were to like put my finger on like the biggest reason why there are problems in relationships at work, I really think it's based on a lack of trust, history, communication, and misperception.
You know, there's a couple of things that I would have kind of expected in your list that you didn't name. So maybe you can comment on. One was the generational issues that we see in the workplace today with four different generations concurrently working. And the other is with the diversity of cultures that we have in the workplace. Do those two things, are they big contributors to this area?
Well, actually, the culture one, I have run into that before, and in a few minutes I'm going to tell you a story, and I'll tell you a little bit about how culture played a role. The generational differences, I think, I would say that they play a role, but I wouldn't say that they are necessarily the main reason for the problem. But I think it's definitely exists. It definitely exists. And when I think about the people that I've done some of these relationship repair sessions with, most of them have been, surprisingly, actually from the same generation. So it may be that I just haven't had that situation yet. I see that in my training all the time. You know, when I'm doing training classes, the generational differences and what motivates different generations, you know, that does play a big role. So both of them, both of those are, you know, definite reasons. Have they been common for me? Not so much.
Okay. Well, look, Anita, before you go any further, I want to take just a minute for a quick commercial break. Then we're going to come right back to you, and I want to hear that story you promised.
Okay, you got it.
Don't go away.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
He used to pester me for a walk. Now, it's the other way around. Hoag's physicians perform more orthopedic procedures than any other hospital in Orange County. Our orthopedic program, in fact, ranks among the top five in the entire country. So whatever it is you live for, you can get back to it sooner. Because as it turns out, the best part of life is simply living it. Hoag for Life. Visit us at www.hoag.org.
OCTalkRadio.net.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
If you just tuned in, we're talking to Anita Golden, who is a coach specializing in, well, she does a lot of things, but we're talking today about workplace relationships. So, Anita, what is it that you really do, and is there a story that kind of illustrates what you do with people?
Okay. I can tell stories and stories, but I know we don't have all day. What I thought I would do is share with you a scenario that it's an actual scenario, but the names will be not mentioned to protect the innocent. But it will give me an opportunity to kind of explain to you how the relationship repair sessions work. Before I jump into that, though, I want to mention one thing, and that is I just really wanted to mention kind of why it is important to resolve these relationships, because when you've got bad workplace relationships, you end up with all types of problems: morale, motivation, productivity. Those are all affected. Absenteeism, turnover, all these different things. And it's not just the two people involved in the workplace conflict that are affected, but the people that they're managing as well, because everybody talks. I just recently read a really interesting article online talking about what the cost is of conflict in the workplace. And there was a study done back in 2008 by a company called CPP, that they're the company that's the publisher of Myers-Briggs and the Thomas Kilman assessments on conflict in the workplace. And what they found, and I just thought this was fascinating, was that the average employee in the United States spends 2.8 hours a week of their time in conflict issues, in issues that are related to conflict in the workplace, 2.8 hours a week. And that when you did the math, that totaled $359 billion in lost wages in 2008.
Wow.
I mean, that's, to me, you know, everybody is always talking about, you know, the cost of turnover and the cost of absenteeism and stuff like that. But when I saw that statistic, I thought, you know what, I think I'm on the right track.
And, you know, my guess would be the number is even higher, because so many times the conflict I see in the workplace with clients is conflict that they refuse to identify as conflict. In other words, two people that don't talk to each anymore, they say, we don't have a conflict. Their solution is they just don't talk to each other.
They avoid each other. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I had two clients that I did a workplace repair session for them, and they basically they worked at a medical device company. And one was a scientist. The other was like the VP of regulatory. And they tiptoed in opposite directions to stay away from each other, because they just didn't even want to. Like, the conflict was there, but they just stayed away. When I brought the two together to do the relationship repair, we uncovered like a 3-year-old grudge that one of the participants had been holding against the other person, because they had heard through someone else that the other person had been quote unquote thrown under the bus, right? Someone talks badly to their boss about them. But it just was amazing to me that, you know, for 3 years, two people working together would just basically avoid each other. And believe me, it impacted, you know, the way work got done. But it just was, it's just such an eye opener, you know, how people will avoid these things rather than face them. So.
Oh, yeah. It seems so much easier for them. You're right.
Yeah. Until they can't get their work done. And that's kind of what happened. It got to a point where they weren't able to get their work done. So they had to do something finally. But people, avoidance is it's a strategy. It is a strategy that some people will use. To get back to what you asked me before, I know I'm probably jumping around a little bit. You know, you were asking, you know, what exactly is the process that I do, and to kind of give you a scenario to kind of give it a little bit of real life. And a particular scenario was one of the first ones I did. It was actually probably about 2 years ago. I had two managers working at a hotel. One oversaw purchasing, and the other oversaw food and beverage. And anybody who knows anything about hotels knows that, you know, food and beverage has to purchase a lot of food in order to run restaurants, right?
Right.
So these two individuals had some major relationship issues, and it ranged from the perception that policies were being broken, that people were being rude, that individuals were bad-mouthing one person to their staff about the other, and there was just a general lack of trust going on. And then to your point about cultural backgrounds, the other kind of key piece in this story was the two people had very different cultural backgrounds. One was, you know, homegrown American guy, and the other was Persian. And the Persian person was the person who was doing the purchasing. And so, you know, people from other countries and in that part of the world, they like to wheel and deal. You know, that's part of the bargaining and the bartering, and all of that is sort of part of their culture. Whereas the all-American person, you know, he wanted everything done by the book. And so there was this struggle going on. That was just part of the struggle. You know, that's an example of where culture played a really big role, because for one person, they feel like the bartering should be part of, you know, part of doing business. For the other, there's a policy that says we don't, like, price fix, and we don't what's it called when you call around and you put people at odds? There's a legal term for that. I forget.
It escapes me right now.
But basically, you know, so there was some conflict. So what I do when I get a situation like this, you know, I basically have a 5-step process. So before I even start the first step, you know, I get the call, I find out what's going on, I ask some questions and, you know, really talk to the leadership above the people who are having the problem. So I don't walk in totally blind. Then the first step I do with the two individuals is I actually send them out an assessment. I use the Everything DISC workplace assessment, and I'll tell you the reason I use that in just a moment. I send it out, they do it online, and then we either do a phone debrief or I can debrief with them in person. But basically, this assessment helps a person kind of understand more about their behavioral style, helps them understand what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are, and just gives them some general information about what their natural way of interacting with others is like. I use this assessment because once the two people have completed it, I can run a report that does a comparison between the two individuals, and that's why I love this tool, because I don't have to sit there and create something. This program actually does it for me. So once I have the DISC assessments from both of them, I run this report, and then I go to phase two, which is a group meeting. So I get together with the two individuals. Generally, it's two. It can be a team, though. It can be a group. And I go over the assessment tool with them, and I hand out to them the comparison style or the style comparison report. And basically, the reason I start here, like I don't, when I bring people together, I don't want to start with, well, let's just talk about what the problem is. I don't want to get into the concrete issues right away. I really want to give them a chance to start almost building relationship over again. And that's part of the plan behind the scenes is I'm bringing them together. I'm giving them a safe environment to talk about their leadership style, their behavioral style, and we look at the comparison report together. And what it does is it actually shows them on a continuum, you know, we look at different characteristic traits, like we look at private versus outgoing, we look at calm versus energetic, patient versus driven. So there's like 6 different characteristic traits that we look at, and both of the individuals are placed on this continuum, so we can see, are they similar, are they different, and we talk about, you know, how does this impact them when they work together. So now, you know, in this meeting, it's more an exercise in understanding themselves and getting an appreciation for each other's styles. We finish up that meeting with the understanding that our next time of getting together, we're going to talk more about the issues that are taking place. So generally I'll do that about a week later, and it's a more mediation style meeting. Each person is given uninterrupted time to express the needs that they have that are not being met generally by that other person. And I encourage them in this discussion, we lay ground rules to make sure nobody's interrupting or talking over each other, but I encourage them to use I language versus you language. So an example would be like, I get frustrated when I can't find the report on guest service, right? As opposed to, you never give me the report on guest service on time, right? So instead, I'm talking about my needs and I'm using I language, not you language. So we start with that, with each person gets, you know, maybe it's 10 minutes of uninterrupted, 15 minutes of uninterrupted time, whatever they need to express the needs that they have that aren't being met. Once that's done, and I get that up usually on a board or flip chart or on paper, the needs. Once that's done, then I open up the floor to clarifying questions, because up to this point, it's been a monologue where they've gotten to sort of get it all on the table. Now I want to give them a chance to ask questions to understand really what's going on and what the problems are all about. And it allows us to kind of hone in on some of those underlying issues. Because what generally happens is someone says, well, I didn't know that you needed this. Well, I wasn't aware that, you know, you perceive this, right? So things start to come out. And that's when, like I mentioned before, a three-year grudge that would surface.
Right.
That's when the grudges come out. That's when the baggage tends to emerge. And also, this is the time that emotions start to kind of bubble up as well. Because even though we're talking about, you know, concrete issues that they're having, this is about how they feel, you know? And what happens, and this is very true in mediation, is when the other party starts to hear how the other person is feeling, because generally what happens is we're always in our own head, right? We're always thinking of the next thing we're going to say when we're going to argue or debate. But in this scenario, they're not allowed to talk while the other person's talking in the beginning. So they have to kind of listen and take notes, you know? So kind of forces them to hear the emotion, hear what's being going on. And that's part of my role as the coach as well, is to kind of make those observations, you know, and make those empathy statements, like, you know, I can see and I can hear that there seems to be some frustration in the way you're feeling. Is that accurate? And then they, you know, obviously they get a chance to start clarifying. So this second meeting is a very, very powerful meeting. And depending on the client, sometimes if they're willing to go long enough, then we'll go into sort of the third piece of it. Sometimes we wait and come back for a third meeting. But the next step is basically as a team, the two individuals start to brainstorm and come up with a list of ideas and action items and suggestions for how they can work better together and resolve some of the issues that are on the table. If we take a time out between the second meeting and the third meeting, I ask them to come back with their list of suggestions. If we try to do it all at once, then it's more of a, okay, let's just brainstorm. Once we get those suggestions and ideas out on the table, then we look through them. We figure out what can we really do? What's possible? What are we willing to do? And then I have the two individuals create an agreement. And the agreement, basically, they write the verbiage of what they're going to agree to do differently moving forward so that the relationship is better and so that the needs are met. So they craft that, they sign it, and then it can go one of two ways. We can either reconvene in a month to discuss how's it going, or sometimes people will want to have individual coaching sessions during that first month so that they can sort of bounce things off of me and I can sort of help guide them through working out the process. Because, you know, let's be honest and serious here. This isn't magic and it takes time, you know, and just because we come up with a great agreement doesn't mean it's easy for them to follow it. So that's where, you know, follow-up coaching comes in and follow-up meetings. And, you know, that's kind of the nature of what I'm doing. So, you know, just to kind of summarize, it's doing an assessment, coming together to discuss the assessment, building some rapport between the two people, and then sitting down and getting down and dirty into kind of a mediation, creating an agreement with some ideas of how to work together going forward. And then following up to make sure that we're on track.
You know, I love the process here where you really are taking the focus off of the individual differences and focusing on the needs of both parties. And it makes it sort of less personal. We're working together to solve a problem.
I think it's important because what happens is, you know, if we spend all our time blaming, then it just becomes, like you said, too personal. I mean, relationships are personal. They are personal. But when we get people to focus on how can we work better together, and when we focus on getting them to understand each other's styles a little bit more, then that's when we start giving them tools to actually communicate a little bit more effectively. And that, you know, quite honestly, that is my goal, is to open the door of communication, and respect and allow them to start trying to build trust, because, right. you know, that's what really needs to take place. And I'll be honest with you, you know, in some of these scenarios, is it a love fest afterwards? Not necessarily. It takes time. But are they working together, and are they feeling better about the relationship as time goes on? Yes, absolutely. And is the work environment improving? Yes, absolutely.
Anita, that was a great explanation. I really appreciate you walking us through that. Obviously, there's a lot more to it than we've been able to cover just here. And but really, I think I have a much better understanding of what the issues are and how you might approach them. Is there anything else that you want to talk about, or anything that I interrupted you on, that before we wrap up here that you want to share with the audience?
I think I really pretty much expressed most of the program that I wanted to share. I do want to kind of put out there, if there are any organizations that are looking for workshops on coaching skills for leaders, I do have a half-day program that I do to help leaders become better at basic coaching skills. So that's the only little extra little promo I'd like to put out there for myself.
Okay, and in those courses, is there anything that involves what you learned in your animal science background, or?
Oh yeah, I usually bring a boa constrictor or two to the class just to, you know, spice it up.
I love it. Okay, how does someone get in touch with you? We talked about your website. It is www.goldinleadership.com, G-O-L-D-I-N.
That is
any
correct.
Other way?
Well, you can contact me directly via phone. My number is 949-387-3436. That's 949-387-3436. Or you can email me at anita@golden, G-O-L-D-I-N, leadership.com.
Anita, thank you very much for the time today, for sharing with us your passion for what you're doing. And, you know, it's just great to hear what you somebody so excited about what they're doing.
Thank you so much, Doug. I just can't tell you how excited I was to be doing this with you today, and I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope to see you at ICF soon.
You could see me there tonight if you were going to be there, but I will be. But, hey, look, welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community. Thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Well, look, we've been listening to Anita Golden, Golden Leadership. If you've missed it, we'll get this up on our website early next week. Our producer's been phenomenal in his turnaround time, maybe even a little quicker than I've been. But anyhow, we'll have it up on our website, The Coaching Perspective, or you can look at it on our Podbeam site, dgefeller.podbeam.com. Got that right for a change. A couple of comments. Next week, we're going to be talking to Dr. Frumi Rachel Barr about the research for her new book, A CEO's Secret Weapon, How to Accelerate Success, and how that led to her founding CEO Virtual Roundtables. And the week after, Halloween Day, I get to do the show on Halloween Day. So we'll be having our special guest, complete with ghosts and goblins, so be sure to tune in for that. And then on the first Thursday in November there, November 7th, our guest is going to be Nelson Zaglaski, I got that wrong, sorry, who's going to be sharing his view on the linkage between personal development and leadership development. And Nelson's a very thoughtful guy, PhD, really going to be an interesting show. So look, be sure to tune in on our future shows. If you're looking for something to do tonight, you got about an hour to get over to the Wyndham Hotel in Costa Mesa and attend the Orange County ICF monthly chapter meeting. We're going to be talking about how to stay out of ethical and legal hot water as a coach with Tina Elliott and Mark Klein, attorney at law. Hey, that's it. Well, it's been a whirlwind. Appreciate you listening to us tonight, listening to us every night. Be sure to tune in again. We're here almost every Thursday, 4 p.m. on OCTalkRadio.net, Orange County's premier talk radio station. Look for our weekly newsletter. It either goes out late Wednesday or it's in your box first thing Thursday morning, depending what side of the Mississippi you live on. If you're not getting it, just drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. I'll see that you get on the list. Well, this is Doug Gefeller signing off. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today. Hope that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals right now. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.